everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on oxymorons when we come back. Hey, you know, when you've got an income of $50,000, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes, you know, assuming you're self-employed and pay that 15.3% Social Security tax rate. That number again, $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income so that when you pay your income tax, you're paying your tax on the $42,350 balance? I mean, after all, you've already paid $7,650 in tax on the $50,000, haven't you? But you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax. Now that means that you pay 17% of the $7,650 twice. Now that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everybody else that pays that tax. What would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just real special? But if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And then click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. You can get it either way. Call direct. The number is 417-273-4967, or go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. All right, oxymorons. You ever heard the stories and jokes about oxymorons? They're kind of humorous. You know, things like military intelligence and cruel kindness. When you look up the word oxymoron in the dictionary, they tell us it comes from oxy, that's O-X-Y, meaning sharp, plus moros, M-O-R-O-S, meaning foolish. It's a combination for epigrammic effect of contradictory or incongruous words. It's using opposites to illustrate a point. It's insane in its final analysis. It's crazy. It's nutty. It's weird, off the wall, stupid, or ignorant on purpose. Now, there are oxymorons like drunk drivers kill. Have you ever heard that? Drunk drivers kill. Social Security is the third rail of politics. Shopping for a mortgage. Have you ever heard someone say, if you don't get a college education? These are all oxymorons. Maybe you don't think of it in terms of, gee, I never thought of drunk drivers killed as being an oxymoron. But I took a little time to analyze it, and I thought I'd share some of my thoughts with you because it looks kind of oxymoronic to me. Now, I'm pretty sensitive to drunk drivers. You know, I'm not I'm not suggesting that you should go out and get looped and then get behind the wheel and start driving down the highway. But when we take a look at drunk drivers killed, and we analyze the number of people that get killed in traffic accidents, it's about 43,000 a year, which is down from over 50,000 a year when I was a kid. When there were fewer drivers and less safe automobiles, you've got to remember, back in the 50s, we didn't have seat belts in the car. And a lot of times we didn't even have speed limits. I mean, there were states when I was a kid didn't have speed limits. The limits on kind of like Germany today. They don't have a speed limit in their autobahns. And so people drove fast. And I was born in the era before drunk driving was a crime. So if you were drunk, it didn't make any difference whether you're drunk or sober. You know, the reason most people drive drunk is because they're too drunk to walk. And so they have to drive because they can't walk, so you have to get home somehow. And I don't know whether drunk drivers killed more people back in the 40s and 50s and 60s than sober drivers or not, but sober drivers kill more people than drunk drivers. Did you know that? I mean, even though cars are safer today, and they're designing cars, you know, better and better with more impact, and they've got these seats, you know, that have head rests behind them to keep you from getting whiplash, and they've got airbags in them now, you know, to keep you from getting hurt, you know, when you have a wreck and so on. And so even though there are many more drivers, and I don't know how many, the last I heard there's around 200 million drivers in the United States, 200 million people with driver's licenses, or something on that order, some big number like that, out of 300 million people, about 2 out of every 3 of us have a driver's license. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who didn't have a driver's license. That's how common it is. And those people, they're out there driving around on the highways, and so there's more of them today. The population's double what it was when I was a kid. Got twice as many people driving around on the highways. And the traffic accidents have gone down. You know, if you've got twice as many people, if you're killing 50,000 people a year in 1955, with 100 million people driving, and then you get 200 million people driving, you ought to be killing 100,000 a year. And so a lot of people, you know, sociologists and psychologists and criminologists and insurance executives and lawyers and politicians, and, you know, all these people got together and they crafted and enacted laws, you know, like stop at the stop sign and drive on the right side of the road. And I'm not opposed to driving on the right side of the road. You know, I'm not opposed to stop signs and traffic lights. All of those things help in traffic safety. You know, everything, if you just stop and think about it for a minute, what if you didn't have any stop signs or traffic lights and you wanted to drive from here to Los Angeles? You know, that'd be a kind of a nightmare. You know, I get perturbed like everybody else. Oh, darn, the light turned red. Now I got to stop. Well, did you want to stop at the red light, or did you want to just drive through the intersection and get broadsided by a 10-ton truck and get killed? You know, it's a choice that you have to make in life, and so most of us say, well, let's stop sign that red light. It's probably a pretty good idea. So the traffic accidents have gone down from 50,000 a year plus to 43,000 a year. And out of the 43,000, last numbers I saw, I think it was 12,000 of those, 12 or 13,000, were drunk. No, not drunk. They were alcohol-related. That's the word they use. Alcohol-related accidents. Now, you know, my old suspicious brain, you know, my old lawyer's instinct says to me, alcohol-related, is that the same as a drunk driver caused the wreck? Did this drunk cause this accident? Because under Anglo-Saxon administration, we're actually interested in the cause. The fault is what we're looking for. So when we talk about fault here, did this guy run the red light, and as a result of his failing to stop for the red light, entered the intersection and struck another car, causing damage? Because if the guy ran the red light, what difference does it make whether he's drunk or sober, or whether he has blonde hair or red, or he has blue eyes or auburn? I mean, what's the point? I would submit to you that that many of the drivers who were involved in accidents, and probably many of the drivers that are involved in fatal accidents, have blonde hair. So what if we did a study and we found out, oh my God, blondes have twice as many accidents as redheads? Would we then come to the conclusion, well, we need to ban blondes from driving? Well, what are you going to do in Sweden, where nearly everybody's blonde? You see, in Sweden, 99% of the accidents up there are caused by blonde drivers. I mean, it's just probably a fact of life that you got to get used to. What we really want to ask is, did the blonde driver cause the accident? Now, I mentioned to you that my dad was killed in a traffic accident, but it's all right. It's okay. Don't panic now. My dad was killed, but it was okay, because the driver that killed him was sober. He wasn't drunk. Now, the driver that killed my dad made a mistake. He had an accident. He made a bad judgment. He made an error. He had an error in his judgment, and which caused an accident, and the accident caused my dad to be killed. And that's why we call it an accident, an accident. It's an act of deity. Act of deity. It's an accident. It's an act of God, and my dad was killed by an act of God. Could have been a bolt of lightning, you know, came out of the blue and killed my dad. He could have fallen off the porch and broke his neck. I knew a man not too long ago. He fell down the stairs and broke his neck. We call it an accident. Now, if somebody were to place a banana peeling on a dark stairway, let's say on the first step down, and some guy is walking along and he turns down the stairway, steps on the banana peel, that's not an accident. Now, it could be premeditated, or it could be just negligence. If I put the banana peel on the step, saying to myself, well, my wife is going to be carrying the laundry down the steps, and when she's got this big basket in front of her, she cannot see where she's walking, so she is going by instinct and feel. Therefore, if I put the banana peel on the top step, she can't see it because she's doing the laundry. She steps on the banana peel, she's going to fall down. And when she falls, there's a possibility, not necessarily a certainty, but a possibility that she might break her neck. Therefore, she would probably die, and if she did, then I would be able to inherit, or I would be able to collect on her life insurance. We call that homicide. We call that murder. See, we're sitting here saying, I want to kill her, and we have a law that says you shall do no murder. So what we want to do is we want to break the law. In traffic accidents, we very seldom find people that are deliberately trying to kill somebody else. Now, I suppose that may happen from time to time. I guess if a guy wanted to commit suicide, he could be driving down the road at 110 miles an hour on a two-lane highway and just swerve over and hit a Kenworth truck head-on. That ought to do it. He might even kill the driver in the Kenworth truck as a result of his desire to commit suicide, and I suppose that must happen once in a while. So, you drivers of Kenworth trucks out there may be the victims of some guy that is going to commit suicide or is trying to commit suicide. Typically, what happens is the driver falls asleep at the wheel. And this falling asleep at the wheel may be caused by his excessive drinking, or it could be caused by fatigue, or it could be caused by NyQuil. Now, I haven't heard of anybody that gets real excited about some driver that falls asleep at the wheel because he's been sucking on NyQuil. I've never heard of an insurance executive or a pharmaceutical executive or a lawyer, psychologist, or a sociologist that says, we need to ban NyQuil because banning NyQuil or prosecuting people and throwing them in prison because they're under the influence of a drug is worthy of throwing them in jail. But boy, do people get excited, you know, when they're drunk on Jack Daniels. there seems to be a built-in prejudice against Jack Daniels in favor of NyQuil and drugs from the pharmaceutical industry. It could well be that not everybody in the country is a drunk, but everybody in the country, or most of the people, not everybody is a drug addict, but 80% of us are. Yeah, 80% of the people of America are on prescription drugs. Did you know that? One. And if you're 65, you're on average, you're on six. So, you know, as a nation, we're all in favor of drugs. I haven't heard anybody complaining about free drug care, you know, for the elderly or drugs on the street. As long as they're sold by Rexall, it's okay, or Osco, or Butcher, or somebody. But, my God, we're really down on old Harry, Bob, or Bill selling drugs down on the street corner. I don't understand the logic behind that. But this is a nation of drug addicts, and we're real concerned about where we buy our drugs. You know, the purity is very, very important to us. Although, as an oxymoron, I thought I would say in passing, while Americans are almost unanimous, not quite, I'm opposed to the drugs of any kind. I'm opposed to illegal drugs, and I'm opposed to legal drugs. That's not true. Most Americans are in favor of legal drugs. They're just opposed to illegal drugs. But did you know that the illegal drug dealers of America, when they sell those illegal drugs, they kill 6,000 Americans a year? Did you know that? I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. I saw that number the other day. Heroin, cocaine, marijuana, all these drugs, you know, they kill 6,000 a year. Now, do you know how many people die from legal drugs prescribed by their doctors? Prescription drugs? It's 130,000 a year. That's what they admit to. I think it's double that if you got down on the bottom line, but that's what they admit to. So that's why I say it's kind of an oxymoron. The whole drug idea in the country, you know, you got the drug culture, you got the hippies, they're tuning in, dropping out, and I don't know, doing something else. And then you got the legal drug guys over here, you see, and God, they're just down on these drugs, aren't they? That's why I say it's kind of an oxymoron. So I thought I would point out to you that there was a guy down in New Mexico. Down in New Mexico, he's a farmer. This is back about 1964, if I remember right. And this old farmer is driving his 1948 GMC pickup, and he's drunk, just bombed out of his mind. There's no argument about this guy being drunk. In fact, after the accident, when the police got there and they took the drunk out of the rack, he survived it. You know, there's this old story, you know, the drunks always survive, and it's your blonde, blue-eyed teenage daughter that dies because of this drunk driver's. And this was a particularly tragic accident because not only was this farmer drunk, he had a Mickey in his jockey box. Now I remember my Uncle Carol, he used to have a Mickey in his jockey box, and so did my dad. In fact, when I was a kid, nearly everybody had a pint of whiskey in the jockey box. I thought it was normal until, you know, I grew up and I found out that not everybody was a drinker, you know. There was a few Seventh-day Adventists, and they didn't have any whiskey in the jockey box, but all the Catholics did. So, anyway, this guy, he's got this pint of whiskey, you know, about half empty in his jockey box, and the farmer's driving home, and he has this head-on accident. The thing that made it so tragic was that there was a doctor and his wife and his two blonde, blue-eyed daughters, ages 11 and 13, in the automobile. Now, the doctor was on holiday. He had left Los Angeles, California, and he was driving to Florida on vacation. They're going to be gone for a while, so they took a trip, and they want to take a trip across the country, and they're going to Florida. And so they're driving across New Mexico, and before they got to Albuquerque, here comes this head-on accident. And it's what we call alcohol related because the farmer's drunk. But we fixed this because the doctor and his wife and two daughters were all killed in this head-on crash. And this drunk driver, this farmer, of course, he was apprehended there. He was injured, and he was sent to the hospital, and then he was jailed, and then he was prosecuted, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for driving drunk. See? And you might sit there and say, well, that's his just deserts. He deserved 10 years in prison, and probably that was a light sentence, you know, for killing four people. You know, it was negligent homicide, I guess. Now, here's, as old Paul Harvey would say, but here's the rest of the story. See, the accident wasn't caused by the drunk farmer. The accident was caused, they supposed, by the doctor who was fatigued after having driven straight from Los Angeles, almost to, but not quite to Albuquerque, nonstop. And that he had become fatigued, and he fell asleep at the wheel, and he crossed the center line, and he hit the farmer head on. Now, he didn't kill the farmer, but the farmer didn't kill the doctor and his wife and his two children. The doctor's bad judgment, the doctor's fatigue, the doctor's accident, the act of deity, killed the doctor, his wife, and the two little girls. Not the farmer. Not the bottle of whiskey. Now, in the Bible, God has a solution to these kinds of problems. And he says to us that we should judge righteous judgment. Locking a man up for 10 years because he's drunk driving down the road, who did not cause any damage to anybody, is not righteous judgment, boys and girls. Now, I understand all you religious people out there. You have a built-in bias against alcohol to start with. Jesus did not have a built-in bias against alcohol because he turned water into wine at a wedding. And he drank wine himself every Passover. Now, I don't know how much he drank, but he drank enough that his other religious competitors, people, you know, like Sadducees and Pharisees and Essenes and others, accused him of being a wine bibber. And he made an observation. He says, you know, John the Baptist doesn't eat or drink, and you call him demon-possessed. I come along, and I'm eating and drinking, the Son of Man, he says, comes eating and drinking, and you call him a wine bibber. I just thought I'd point that out. Today we call them winos rather than wine bibbers. So he drank a little. I don't know how much he drank, and I don't know how drunk he got, but I do know that he drank a little. Now, I'm fully familiar with the scripture that says that no drunkard shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. But that didn't say that Jesus was a drunkard. It said that his opponents called him a drunk, called him a wine bibber. And I suppose those guys were religious, like kind of like Seventh-day Adventists. They're more righteous than the rest of us because they don't drink. And they're all going to heaven because they don't drink, and all of us that drink are going to hell. I just want to point that out to you. It sounded like an oxymoron to me. That's just one of many oxymorons that's in the Bible, or many oxymorons that we find out here in society. Now, the other day, and I say the other day, you know, it's probably a couple, 3 years ago now, but there were two airline pilots, and they were drinking, and it was before their flight, see, and so they're in the bar over here, and they're having a couple of drinks. And so, in the 1920s, actually it was before that, it was during World War One. You know, it was a period of time when the religious people of the country, you know, wanting to be good, righteous people, they weren't satisfied that they themselves were righteous and didn't drink. They wanted everybody else in the country to be just as righteous as they were, so they introduced a new concept in the nation, which was called prohibition. Prohibition. These religious people, typically, they not only are righteous themselves, they want you to be just as righteous as they are. And so they want to prevent you from sinning, and so they want to take that booze away from you. So we did a little of this prohibition thing for about 13 years, as I recall, 1920 to about 1934. 14, 15 years. And there was only one thing that I agreed with Franklin D. Roosevelt on, and that was repeal of prohibition. God bless old Franklin D. Anyway, as the story goes along, they failed in prohibition, and so from that point on, they have approached it from a little different angle. What they do today is they regulate it to death. It's kind of like smoking, you know. Now, I'm an old-timey smoker, and I'm not in favor of smoking, and it's kind of offensive, and I really don't like people smoking around me, you know, but I'm not trying to take your cigarettes away from you people out there that smoke. I'm not trying to take your booze away from you. I'm not trying to take your guns away from you. I don't believe that guns kill. I think that people kill with guns. And if they didn't have a gun, they'd have to kill you with a knife. People that want to kill somebody have to have an instrument to do it with, and a gun just happens to be the easiest, fastest, bestest, cleanest way to kill people. I don't deny that. In fact, if you're going to kill me, I'd prefer to be shot rather than stabbed. So, you know, if some of you guys out there really hate me real bad and you want to kill me, would you please shoot me? And I'd prefer to be shot right straight between the eyes, if you could do that. Because it's kind of fast. Now, getting stabbed with a knife in the guts and then bleeding to death and great pain, anguish, and suffering over there just doesn't appeal to me real good. So, I really don't want to die either way, but, you know, if I had my druthers, you know, I'd take the gunshot. Because the shock sets in so fast, you know, you don't feel the pain. Now, you see the New Mexico farmer story over here. Well, I got to tell you another little story over here because one day I was in the Idaho legislature, and I used to be a lobbyist. You know, I'm really a bad guy. I'm a corporate executive. I'm a lobbyist. I'm a lawyer. I mean, if there's any wickedness and evil that you can find in a man, I've got it all. I've got the corner on the market. If there's anybody that ought to go to hell, it's Georgie, little Georgie. And I don't deny that, you know, not for a minute. But I was in the legislature one day up in Idaho. And the Transportation Committee was meeting. And they were passing some legislation concerning drunk driving. Most politicians are opposed to drunk drivers. Now, most politicians are themselves drunks. But, you know, they work for other people, and these other people have vested interests. Now, the drunk driving legislation nationwide, you know, the Mad Mothers Against Drunk Drivers and so on, God bless them all. You know, you ladies out there have created a $2 billion a year industry in the legal profession that didn't exist before you people got into the legislatures and outlawed drunk driving. Because as I pointed out in the old days, when it was legal to drive drunk, I don't know how many people the drunks killed. But I do know this. Sober drivers have always killed more people every year than drunk drivers. And my common sense says, if sober drivers kill two people out of every three, and drunk drivers kill one out of every three, if you wanted to save more lives, what you do is you ban all of the sober drivers from the highways and leave only the drunks to drive, and you'll save two people out of every three. And I didn't even go to college to figure that out, and I don't have any letters after my name. Now, it's probably true, and, you know, for you people out there that are fuming right now, hang on a second now, don't turn the dial until I finish my thought here, because only a fool answers now before he's heard the whole matter. When we're talking about drunk drivers, I don't deny that drunk drivers kill some people because of bad judgment. Probably they drank too much. And then they fell asleep at the wheel, and then they crossed over the center line, and they might not have gone to sleep had they not had the alcohol. I mean, that's a true statement. And when we take their break here, I'm going to come back and tell you a story about a nice lady. A very respectable lady. A lawyer lady that had an accident. And was just guilty as hell of drunk driving. And killed a couple of little kids. And I'm going to tell you what her punishment was. And then we're going to compare her punishment with the punishment of the New Mexico farmer. And then we're going to take a look at justice. and righteousness in judgment. Right after this. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and if you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package to order yours. Please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or a local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. I have to give you that little reminder here so we can satisfy the FCC here in the United States and around the world and let you know who we are and what we're doing and why. I know somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, well, my daughter was killed by a drunk driver. Okay. Well, let me tell you, lady, my dad was killed by a sober driver. And my dad's just as dead as your blonde, blue-eyed daughter. Now, I'm opposed to people getting killed in traffic accidents. I'd like to eliminate these 43,000 traffic accidents. I'd like to save 43,000 lives a year. That isn't going to happen. And since that isn't going to happen, then we have to deal with reality the way it really is. And our God tells us to judge righteous judgment, so I think that we ought to judge righteous judgment. Now, I've got two stories here I need to tell you. First of all, I brought up the subject of the legislature as a lobbyist. I went into the legislature and I listened to sociologists, and they got up there and they were preaching their sermons about drunk drivers and how bad they are. And then the psychologists got up and they preached their sermon, you know, and they said, boy, these drunk drivers are really bad. And then the criminologists got up there and they said, these drunk drivers ought to all be branded as criminals. And then the insurance executives, they came in and they preached their sermon to the legislators and they said all these drunk drivers over here are bad news. And then the lawyers came in and they talked about it. So I got up and I said, well, let me tell you the story over here. And so I'm telling you today the story that I told to the legislature. You know, I had about a 10 or 15 minute. I've forgotten how much time they allowed me. I think it was 15 minutes. And I said, I'm opposed to this legislation, and I'm opposed to this legislation on the grounds that. And I said, drunk drivers, if the guy is drunk, and he causes an accident, and he kills somebody, or he causes a damage, he should pay for all of the damages that he causes. That comes from the Bible. It's called strict liability. Strict liability requires you to pay all of your damages. Now, you people do not want to practice that biblical principle, and that's why you all have auto insurance. Because insurance is the exact opposite to strict liability. It's called limited liability. You see, if you were practicing strict liability and you had an accident, whether you're drunk or sober, you'd have to pay every dime's worth of damage. then you don't want to do that. You do not want to be responsible for your damages. Because you know as well as I do, whether you're a Seventh-day Adventist teetotaler or whether you're a Jack Daniels drunk, you could have an accident and you could cause some damage, and I don't want to have to pay for that. So the nice people down at Allstate Mutual of Omaha come along and they say, well, now we'll sell you an auto insurance policy. And we'll limit your liability to the premium. You give us $500 a year, or $1,000, or $2,000, or whatever your rate is, and you can have a $100,000 wreck, kill five people, and we'll pay all the damages for it. God comes along and says, I don't care whether you're drunk or sober. You kill somebody, you cause them 10 cents worth of damage, you pay 10 cents, you kill them. And then we've got a program over here called an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. So here's the way God handles drunk drivers. You're driving down the road and you're bombed out of your mind drunk. And a doctor who is fatigued falls asleep, crosses the center line, runs into your pickup, and causes you some damage. The doctor's estate will reimburse, will compensate you, Mr. Drunk Driver, for every damn dime that that careless doctor who fell asleep and caused this damage, he will pay every dime, dead or alive. And that's called righteous judgment. Now let's suppose that the shoe's on the other foot. And the drunk driver, he falls asleep at the wheel and he crosses the center line and he hits the doctor and kills the doctor and his wife and two kids. Then the drunk driver will pay every dime's worth of damage. And in this case, since there were some deaths involved, we will take the drunk driver out and stone him to death. When was the last time you had a drunk driver stoned to death in your state, mad mothers? Now, what you've created here is a $2 billion a year industry. You see, when a drunk driver gets a ticket for driving drunk, he has to come into court and he has to pay the lawyer $1,500 to represent him. And then he goes through the sociologists, psychologists, criminologists, insurance executives, and the lawyers over here, and he pays them all a lot of money. And it makes a lot of money for sociologists, psychologists, criminologists, insurance executives, and lawyers. And it doesn't do jack diddly squat for the drunk driver problem or the drunk drivers that cause accidents and cause damages. Not a dime comes from these guys. But they sure pay it to the sociologists, psychologists, criminologists, insurance executives, and lawyers, and it's $2 billion a year. So if you want to drive drunk, get ready to pay your share of that $2 billion industry that goes to the legal, to the legal system. That's what that really all boils down to. Now, I said I'd tell you a little story over here about a nice lady. This nice lady was a young woman who was a lawyer working at the Department of Employment in Boise, Idaho. And at Christmas time, you know, these people all practice Christmas. I'm not really sure why, but they do. And they all practice Christmas. They had a big Christmas party. And they served a little booze there. Now, here's this lady. Now, she's a lawyer. This lady is trained in law. And she knows about driving drunk. I don't know if she's an alcoholic or not, but, you know, she could have been. But whether she's an alcoholic or not, she's a lawyer. She's a trained professional. So she's not a very big lady. She weighs about 110 pounds. She's kind of a little petite lady. And she gets to drinking, and I don't know how much she drank. But, you know, if you weigh 110 pounds, you can't drink as much as I do at 200. I mean, that's just where reality's at, lady. I knew a guy one time, and he was an alcoholic. He was a Canadian alcoholic. Boy, those Canucks, they can really drink. I ever see anything like this guy. He could sit there at dinner. We'd go out to dinner, you know, about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock after work, you know, after the store closed. And old Darwin, he'd sit down there, and he'd order a couple of highballs before we ordered, and then he'd order a couple of highballs while he was drinking. And after we got through drinking, he'd drink another. He could drink as many as 16 highballs in the course of an evening. Get behind the wheel and drive home. I've often said I'd just then drive home with Darwin drunk as I would drive some of these other guys sober. He was just steady as a rock. My Uncle Carol used to drink a gallon of wine a day. He's an alcoholic. He could salt it away. A gallon of wine a day. Most people couldn't drink a gallon of water a day. Test it. I mean, if you think you can drink a gallon, you just go out and drink a gallon of water in a day. 24 hours. Just try it. Keep track of how much you're drinking over here. Pour a jug full of water and start drinking on it. See if you can get it all down in 24 hours. My Uncle Carol, you know, he didn't drink wine, you know, by the glass. You know, he drank it by the water glass. You know, these little wine glasses, about 4 ounces. You know. My Uncle Carol, he poured 12 ounces, you know, on a glass. He boom, 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 down that, you know, just steady as a rock. You know, hold his hand up. Now, and he didn't have that wine. I mean, he'd get the shakes. He had to have that booze. And your body develops a tolerance for that. And that's why most alcoholics driving drunk are really safe guys. I mean, they can drink a lot. So, you know, when I was a kid, when it wasn't against the law, you know, to drive drunk, hell, you know, a guy that was out here drinking two or three drinks, you know, like my dad. Now, if my dad ever drove sober, it was news to me. Now, he wasn't down and out, you know, bombed out drunk, you know, passed out on the floor, you know, like these college kids do today. They get out on these binge drinks, you know, binge drinking. Now, my dad was a pretty sensible drinker. He'd go in the bar and have a couple of drinks and get out and drive on down the road and go do something or whatever he's in. He might stop and over to another bar, you know, a few hours later. He might have another couple of drinks or something like that. But in the course of the day, you know, he might drink 2, 4, 6 drinks. And then drive all day. You know, he was an insurance salesman. He's out on the road driving all the time. And most people that I knew of drank about like that, you know. But by today's standards, see, they would all be legally drunk all the time. See, they've got this teetotaler mentality, you know, that if your blood alcohol is, you know, at 0.8 or 1 or something like that, you're drunk. And so it's just a regulation. You know, you're going to just regulate this thing, you know, to death, just like you do with automobiles and gun registration, one thing and another. We can't ban you from having guns, so we'll just regulate it to death. We can't ban you from having a car, so we'll just regulate you to death. We can't ban you from drinking, so we'll just regulate you to death. See? And so you get all these government regulations in here. But I don't recall that drunk drivers were any big problem in 1940 or 1935 or 26, you know, any more than they are today. Now, today, drunk drivers are god-awful, big, bad problems. Cost $2 billion a year to deal with this drunk driving problem, which, you know, in my view, is probably more tempest in a teapot. But anyway, this nice lady, she's drinking, and she drinks too much. We don't know how much she drank, but evidently it was too much because she was legally drunk. She drives home. Now, she falls asleep driving home to Nampa. She works in Boise. She lives in Nampa. She's drunk. She falls asleep, and there's two little kids playing alongside the road. So her car runs off the road, runs over the two little kids, and kills them. Dead. Okay. All right, so fortunately, it's okay, though. That's okay. The lady has a driver's license. Her car is properly registered. She has all of the insurance. So she's 100% legal. What she did was she drove drunk. Now, the people whose little kids are killed are not paid by the insurance company. See, the insurance company refused to pay them, and they had to sue the insurance company to get their money. I don't know what they settled for, but it was something less than the policy limit. Under the law of Moses, under the Mosaic law, it wouldn't make any difference whether this lady was a lawyer and whether this lady was drunk or whether she was sober. She ran over two little kids. And it was her fault. Hell, she never denied it was her fault. She pled guilty. That doesn't bring the little kids back. And I wanted to bring up the insurance executives over here, because if you think insurance companies are selling you auto insurance because they want to right what's wrong, you got your head right square up the wrong end of your anatomy, boys and girls. Insurance executives are interested in making profits, and they don't give a damn whether they're making profits off of little dead kids or they're making profits off of drunks or lawyers or anybody else. Profit's profit. and the less claims we pay, the more profit we make. So you can forget about the nice guys down at Mutual of Omaha, or you're in safe hands with Allstate, because that's just so much BS. You know it, and I know it, and it's an oxymoron to say that insurance is out here to protect us. It isn't. It doesn't. It hasn't. It never will. It's not for that purpose. That's why I call it an oxymoron. So this nice lady now, she has to go to trial. She has to go to court. Now, she goes in, pleads guilty, and so here's her sentence. Her driver's license was taken away for 1 year. She was sentenced to jail for 1 year, sentence suspended upon her performance of 200 hours of community service. I don't think that's justice. I don't believe it. Now, there's a case of a drunk driver that actually caused damage. It's called alcohol-related. It's an alcohol-related homicide. In this case, it's not quite homicide. It's called negligent homicide. God has a, in the Bible, God has a program for negligent homicide. And what it is that you have to pay the damages that the victims place upon you. Now, this lady, maybe she had enough money, instead of going to trial and pleading guilty, she would have been placed in front of the mother and father of the two little children that were killed. And then she would say, "What penalty do you want me to pay you?" And then the parents would lay the penalty upon the lady. You know, the drunk driver in this case. And the penalty is death. An eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. The penalty is death. You killed the two little girls, and the penalty, lady, is you die. Now, there's an exception to the rule. She could say to the parents, "But what good is it for me to die? It's not going to bring your children back, and I will pay you damages or compensation. I will pay you $200,000. I will pay you $500,000. I will ransom my life back." There's a provision for ransoming your life back. Now, the parents could take a look at this and say, "Well, okay, you know, for $500,000, we'll let you off the hook." No, no, we're not practicing strict liability here, boys and girls. We're practicing limited liability, remember? So this lady's punishment is 200 hours of community service, 1 year in jail, suspended, and she loses her driver's license for 1 year. The farmer goes to prison for 10 years, and he didn't even cause the accident. Now, that's what I'm opposed to. A drunk who causes a death needs to pay the piper. And a sober man who causes a death needs to pay the piper. And a blonde who causes a death needs to pay the piper. Hair color, eye color, height, weight, shape and form, skin color, drunk or sober, is irrelevant and immaterial. Who caused the damage? That's what's relevant. That's what's material. That's what counts. Now, in the old days, when you saw a drunk driving down the road, you know, you'd pull up behind him. I remember a couple of times this happened, you know, when I was a kid, you know, and this guy's weaving, you know, driving down the road, and he's weaving. So right away, you know, you're watching this guy, and it doesn't take you long to figure out, well, watch out for this guy. Now, he's drunk. Okay. And so you'd wait for a clear spot. This is before we had freeways. See, we used to have two-lane highways. So you'd wait for a straightaway. And then when this guy is kind of over here toward the shoulder a little bit, you gun it and you race up behind him, see? And then just as you get up behind him, you gun it and you whip around him and you whip back in and you drive on down the road. You didn't get excited and say, "Oh, my God, there's a drunk driver. Let's turn him in. You know, let's go call the cops and see if we can get this guy arrested and jailed." I'm going to tell you a little story over here about how this jail thing works. Do you know what it costs to lock somebody up in jail? Well, in Idaho, back in the 1980s, I did a little case study on that one. And in Idaho in those days, in the Ada County Jail, cost $13 a day to put this guy in jail. And in prison, it cost a little more than that. I think it was $18 a day. This is back in the early 80s. Today, it costs about $35 a day to keep somebody in your local county jail, and it costs around double that to keep them in a penitentiary. And locking people up for drunk driving, you know, just driving drunk, just locking people up over there, costs you money, and it costs about $2,000 for a trial. And then it costs money for the probation officer, and it costs money, you know, for probation and parole and one thing and another. And all of this goes to what we call the law enforcement growth industry. It's all paid for by taxes, paid for by you taxpayers out there. So you get an opportunity to pay twice. So you get an opportunity to pay when this guy is driving down the road drunk, and he doesn't even cause you any damage, and you just turn him in, you get to pay for all the costs that are involved in that. And of course, that drunk, he gets to pay for a lion's share of it also. He doesn't get off scot-free. And that's why we're after these drunk drivers, because they're a revenue source. They make money. They make money for sociologists, psychologists, criminologists, insurance executives, lawyers, and probation officers, and guards, and prisons, and prisoners. And, you know, it just makes a lot of money for everybody. And I'm sitting here saying, well, I really didn't want to buy into that. I'm really not interested in paying for all of that. When a guy causes me a damage, he needs to pay me. I don't really care whether he's on NyQuil or Jack Daniels. And I told you, I can tell you a story about these two airline pilots. Well, these two pilots over here, they were arrested and they were jailed. And they were hauled out of the cockpit of the airplane. Now, I just wanted to point something out. Can any of you people out there point to an airline crash caused by a drunk pilot? Can you identify one of those? I don't know. I've never heard of one. I've heard of a lot of airplane crashes. I've heard of a lot of airline pilots. They call it pilot error. And in insurance companies, they like that pilot error thing over there. It ain't our fault. It was the pilot. He did it. You know, Cessna and Piper, they love that term. It's called pilot error, not our airplane. It wasn't our Lycoming engine that conked out. It was pilot error. God, they love that. I'm an old-timey pilot, too, you know. And so I made a couple of errors. You know, I stacked up a couple airplanes. I don't deny that. Hell, I run one through a fence one time. I thought I was going to take old man Peterson's cows with me to heaven. I was taking off one time out of John Michael's field, and I got to racing down the end of the field over there with a load of frost on the wings, hauled back on the flaps, and went right through the fence. Fortunately, old man Peterson already got his cows out before my airplane went into his field, because I'd have made a lot of hamburger, I'll tell you that. But anyway, the moral of the story is I'm not here defending my own dumb actions over here. You know, if I'd have killed a bunch of old Peterson's cows, I needed to pay for all of them. That's okay. I had insurance. I was practicing limited liability back in those days. I was doing like that lawyer lady over there. You know, I was fully insured. So if I kill you, you know, the insurance company can pay you plenty. I'm sure that the man, in fact, I know the man that killed my dad had plenty of insurance, paid my mother a handsome amount of money. I mean, the insurance company came in there. It was wrongful death and one thing and another. But the moral to the story is I don't think that paying money was exactly the penalty that ought to have been applied to that. And that's where judges come in. You know, judges were charged by God. All you judges out there, you know, you have a charge from the creator of the universe. If you're sitting in Anglo-Saxon administration, administering these punishments, one thing, another, to judge righteous judgment. And I don't see a hell of a lot of righteous judgment being applied here, you know, in the United States. But I can tell you another story over here. The police get in on this act of drunk driving also. And there was a fellow, he was an Indian guy, Nez Perce Indian. He was down at the college, you know, there in Boise. And he was drunk. He's having a good time. Big wild party out here, see. And he was obnoxious, and the neighbors called the cops. And the cops came out, and, you know, so they toned the party down a little bit, you know, for a couple hours. And then the party got a little out of line again. And so the cops had to come out a second time. And this Nez Perce Indian guy over there, and I interviewed him when I was in jail one time. I always like to interview prisoners, see what they're in there for. And so this Nez Perce Indian guy, young kid, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, I don't know exactly, but just a young kid going to college. And he's having a wild party, and you know, Indians and firewater go together, you know, like water and oil, so it didn't last, you know, too long. So pretty soon the cops come out here a second time, and so this cop comes up to the door, and he's talking to this Indian kid, and he says to this Indian kid, he says, "Is that your car down there?" The kid had his Volkswagen Beetle, one of these old-timey Volkswagen Beetles. He says, "Is that your car down there?" And so this kid says, "Well, yeah, it's my car." And the cop says, "Though, it's parked illegally. Now get down there and move it." So the kid goes and gets the keys to the car, and he goes down and he starts the engine. And he's going to move the car because the cop told him to. As soon as he starts the engine, two more cops race over to the car, jump the kid, open the door, yank him out, kick him in the ribs twice, put the handcuffs on him, and charge him with drunk driving. Was he driving? Well, certainly. The law says if the engine's running and you're sitting behind the wheel, you're drunk driving. Who told him to get behind the wheel drunk? A cop. Did that come out at trial? No. Now, this Indian, see, he had been already convicted twice before of drunk driving. So, no, drunk driving wasn't something new. And in the kid was guilty of drunk driving because the cop told him to. This is called entrapment. Entrapment, pure and simple. I don't know where this kid's lawyer was. Probably had the public defender in there, and those public defenders are about as useless as tits on a boar hog, but then, you know, it's another story for another day. A public defender is another oxymoron. Defender? No, they work for the state. They're not working for you, the client over here. They're working for the judge, the prosecutor, and the state of Idaho to help convict you. They just eliminate all appealable error. That's the purpose for a public defender, is to eliminate appealable error. Well, they sentenced this kid to 5 years in prison. Now, you know, a felony like that ruins this kid's life, you know, for the rest of his life. Now, it's true he was drunk. It's true he had a wild party. But he was not drunk driving. And the policemen who did that to him, and the prosecutors, and public defenders, and the judges, they all knew what they were doing. They're going to lay this guy away. And they did. But boys and girls, that's not righteous judgment. That's a crime. It's a criminal act on the part of the public officials. And it doesn't solve the problems of drunk driving. And that's the moral to this story. Drunk drivers kill is an oxymoron because sober drivers kill. And you're not out here eliminating sober drivers, are you? You've taken a class of people who are drunks. Hell, you could take the same class of people and do a study and find out how many people involved in auto accidents are blondes and do the same thing. But that's not righteous judgment. And there's too many blondes to lock them all up in jail. But there's not so many drunks. And after all, we're all prejudiced against drunks, aren't we? Because we're all religious, aren't we? So it's really a religious bias behind it all. And then money for the sociologists, psychologists, criminologists, insurance executives, and the lawyers. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So I'll tell them, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.